In 2003, four young men in Lexington, Kentucky, concocted a plan to steal a book, well, several books actually. But the main one was no ordinary tome. It was an extremely rare book of bird illustrations from the 19th century, held under not very tight security at the local university library, watched over by a single elderly librarian. The group's aim ostensibly was to steal the book, sell it, and split the money. But in the new film, American Animals, a documentary fiction hybrid that recreates the shambolic heist that followed and interviews some of the men today, their parents and some of their friends and other people affected by the crime, what becomes clear is that this ill-conceived and reckless act was born out of a collective delusion in which the men dreamed that they could break out of their comfortable suburban lives, the dullness of them, and experience something extraordinary and invigorating. Now, they didn't all agree. Part of the tension in British writer-director Bart Layton's film is depicting the four very different young men coming to this plan via very different internal processes of moral reasoning. And even then, they're always on the verge of pulling out. There's a clear nod to Tarantino heist movies in American Animals, but the male bickering and the brinkmanship is less and less endearing as the film goes on. And a tragic, well, a very dark side to this tale starts to emerge when they come face to face with the elderly librarian, who's played by Anne Dowd. The current day culprits, as I mentioned, appear in the film, but their appearances are carefully limited to strategic moments in the story, and they all seem haunted by something. Now, I thought midway through the film's intricate weaving of fact and recreation seemed a little bit too pleased with its own neat thesis, but by the powerful ending of American Animals, you are left under no illusions that what you've seen is an authentically poignant allegory about evil. Now, a small evil, but evil nonetheless, sprouting in the most banal of circumstances. Writer-director Bart Layton is coming up, but first a clip from the film. There is some very strong language ahead.
I'm still unclear on what's going to happen with the librarian. Who's going to be dealing with that?
We should probably decide that by drawing lots or a vote or something.
Well, I vote to have nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Yeah, me too. I don't want to do that. I'm not gonna.
Hey, whoa. What the fuck? Obviously, nobody wants to do it. That's why we need to decide it by drawing lots or a vote or something.
Isn't there maybe a way to make her not be there on the day?
No. Of course there isn't a fucking way. That's how you get to be in the room. Someone has to be in there with you. That's how you get to be in the fucking room!
What if she starts screaming or something?
Yeah, or has a fucking heart attack, man.
Yeah.
Guys, when this is all over, we're gonna send her an anonymous package filled with thousands of fucking dollars. She's gonna be happy.
Look, I'm not doing it, okay?
I'm not comfortable with it.
Well, Bart Layton, welcome to The Hub on Screen.
Thanks for having me.
I was a big fan of your previous film, The Imposter, which was about a Frenchman who somehow managed to convince a Texan family, and not just them, some policemen as well, that he was their long-lost son. Extraordinary film. But also really interesting formally. I was wondering, did you have a desire to sort of further explore the boundaries of fiction and documentary with this story, or was your first instinct to do something a little bit more straightforward?
It's a good question. I guess I always kind of start with from the place of, you know, what is the best possible way to tell this particular story? So whether it's doc or whether it's a straight fictionalization of it, I guess, you know, this, you know, like The Imposter, this was a sort of true story that was stranger than fiction. And I guess it lent itself to, I think if you just, like with The Imposter, you know, if you just fictionalized it, I think people probably wouldn't have believed it was true. And with this, you know, this was a story about a group of rather lost young men almost trying to live inside a movie reality instead of, you know, what they perceived as their kind of mundane existence. And so I wanted to try and find a form to the movie that somehow reflected that descent into a kind of fantasy world, you know, that they start in a place which is, and we as an audience start in a place that feels kind of naturalistic and real. And as they get lost in the planning of this heist, you know, we also get lost in the movie, only to be upended when it all goes too far.
And the layers of documentary and fiction therein. I mean, did you get them to agree to appear on camera? These are the real life sort of versions of these characters first, or had you already written a script and did you approach them with a script?
Well, it was totally weird, and, you know, the whole hybrid nature of it meant that there was no real template for the film. You know, there isn't really a movie which combines, I guess, fiction and nonfiction in this way. And so it was tricky because I wrote the script based on letters that I was exchanging with the real guys while they were in prison. And
also actual letters,
physical letters that we were, you know, so we had this weird kind of pen pal correspondence that actually lasted over a period of years because, you know, they ended up with a very long prison sentence. And I was just intrigued by the why of it. You know, they were well-educated young men from good families. It seemed bizarre that they would end up, because so much about the crime felt like, could they ever have expected that it was going to end well? And so I really just wanted to understand more of what would lead, you know, young men with all of these privileges and opportunities to find themselves caught up in something like this. And it was the stuff, it was the things they wrote in the letters that were, I guess, was the thing that took it from, you know, this is a great yarn about an insane kind of caper, to actually this is a story worth telling, which is really about, you know, lost young men looking for identity and looking for, you know, this so-called special life that they believe they'd been promised. And so, so I wrote the script based on what they wrote in their letters. And then when they finally came out of prison, I sat down and did these interviews with them, and I expected them to say more or less what they'd said in their letters and what I'd put in the screenplay, because obviously, you know, I'd had the movie financed based on the script. And of course, you know, the last thing you want to do with real people is turn them into actors and get them to deliver lines. And actually, they didn't say a lot of what I had anticipated them saying.
What was different about what they ended up saying? Were they more guarded?
Yeah, I think there's something about putting stuff on the record, and because it was a devastating thing for their parents, it was pretty, you know, it was a big deal within the community. You know, it was like something is rotten in Pleasantville. You know, they came from this kind of nice, suburban, wealthy town, Lexington, Kentucky. And I guess it wasn't something they were proud of. And so that, you know, whilst they'd written about it in the letters, they certainly weren't kind of over the moon about rehashing it all.
Mm.
So
what do you think it was actually, because they talk a lot about, and I can't remember now because it's blurring in my mind, as it should, I suppose, you know, who said what, whether it was the fictionalized character or the actual guys. But I think in both modes, the film contains these thoughts, and that is that these young men were looking for something exciting, something that was going to be beyond the realms of normal experience, and that was going to, an experience that was then going to sort of propel them into some kind of more, a higher sort of experience of life, I suppose, something that was more exciting and so forth. What's that about? It strikes me as a very entitled thing to say that I've seen what's on offer in normal people life and normal people land, and I don't want any of it. I want to have the rock star life or the international man of mystery life.
Yeah, I think that you've hit on the thing that made me want to tell the story in a way. I think, you know, I mean, one of them wrote to me in letters from jail that he was desperate to become an artist, you know, and I now know him pretty well. He is a very, very talented, I mean, whether you'd call it an artist or whether you call it, you know,
an but
he's a very, he's a very talented drawer, painter, you know, and arguably now an artist. But he was kind of looking at his life, and he was reading about all the great artists that ever lived, and felt that what they all had in common was that they'd suffered and that they'd known trauma and tragedy. And he's looking at his nice suburban life
in Lexington. Yeah.
What am I ever going to have worth making art about? And that, you know, to me, you know, a central protagonist whose main problem is that he doesn't really have a problem is a great starting point. And also, you know, to your point, you know, culturally, I feel like we are now in a, you know, we're in a place where being remarkable is really important. You know, where there's a huge pressure to leave a mark on the world, you know.
So the old narratives that it were used to be open to people and used to be perhaps enough for people, which was, you know, get an education, marry, start a family, all of that, you know, is no longer enough.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you know, for those young men, you know, their parents were successful by any other definition. I mean, that's what the American dream is supposed to look like, right? Nice house, nice car, 2.4 kids, college education, dog on the lawn, all of that stuff which they had. That's average, you know, and for those young men it was mediocrity and
but it's interesting why the crime? That's what's fascinating too, the glamour of pulling off this heist.
Well, I think it wasn't, you know, one of them in, you know, a different one, this, you know, Eric, who's another of the four, described it in a letter to me as he said it was like our version of Fight Club. He said it was like this secret that we had. We were planning this robbery and no one else knew about it. And
that is so unremarkably middle of the road young man, isn't it?
Totally, yeah.
It's like, but it was like trying to be secret. Remarkable, but that's like incredibly unremarkable.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And yeah. You know, and we talked a lot about...
it's typical too, which is what's great.
Yeah, and it was kind of honest. And I think, you know, this idea of wanting a life less ordinary and that, you know, I think now we all live with, you know, these devices that allow us to have a kind of metric for how important we are in the world. You know, if you've got more Twitter followers than me, does that make you more interesting, more valuable in the world? And, you know, and that pressure of leaving a mark, whether it is a good mark or a bad mark, kind of doesn't matter. It's just like, you know, I was interviewed in Seattle a couple of weeks ago by a college journalist, and she said, God, you know, this movie was way too close to home for her and her friends. She was like, you know, we're art students. We suffer from this kind of white guilt. You know, these were all her words. And she said, you know, there's a perception amongst me and my friends that if we don't have a Wikipedia page written about us by the time we're 40, will that mean that we're not successful? You know, a big part of what was motivating the crime was, first of all, they fell in love with this fantasy, you know, the kind of Fight Club-like secret. And they're all, as you'll see, you know, they are erudite, they are super articulate, educated young men who let a bad idea go way, way too far.
Well, the great cautionary tale aspect of this is that, you know, I think everyone looks back on their youth and thinks, wow, there but for the grace of God, whatever, you know, there were certain moments where you might have crossed a line. And this is a story about a group of young men who did cross that line, and there's a real sense of remorse amongst some of them, at least, that wow, crossing that line has left a mark on their reputations, on what they're able to do with their lives at this point, given that they've had, you know, jail time and so forth. Was it difficult to get the woman, the actual woman who was the one human victim of their heist? Mm-hmm. They had to tie her up and they treated her with great brutality, and she was an older woman.
Mm.
So it must have been an incredibly traumatic experience. What did she think about you making this film?
Well, she didn't, you know, she wasn't, I mean, no one, you know, the parents, the various people that appear in the film alongside, you know, you've got the drama, obviously, and then you've got these real voices, and none of them were thrilled to participate to begin with because, you know, I don't think any of them really knew what kind of a movie it was going to be. Was it going to glamorize it? Was it going to be somehow sensationalized? You know, and I think the more they understood what I was trying to do, the more they felt comfortable. And she eventually came on board because I think she wanted to have a voice in it. She subsequently saw the movie and was really, you know, in fact, I just saw in an interview today that she was quoted as saying, you know, it's helped me close the door on it. When, you know, what she said to me was she was finally able to understand them as, you know, they were kind of more idiots than criminals in a way, you know.
Well, you say that, that's interesting too, and I think they do come across, there's a lot of sort of black humour in this, and there's a little bit of a sense of us laughing at them. We're sort of able to, well, I mean, they're idiots, let's face it. I mean, in certain sequences, they really come across as idiots as they try and organise this heist to steal these very rare and expensive books at their local school or university, and get it so wrong. Have they since seen it and been uncomfortable with how they've been portrayed?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was, for them it's a combination of kind of a relief that it's not, you know, they're not portrayed as particularly sophisticated or honourable, or, you know, there's a lot that they would rather was not there, of course. But I think they also acknowledge that it's, you know, they were different people then. They made a big mistake. You know, they're humanized. People may find that objectionable, but I think actually they are human beings. What they did was human. They paid a hell of a cost for it. And it's been a kind of cathartic process, I think, for all of them. I showed them the movie before we premiered it at Sundance, and not with a view to changing it if they didn't like it, because obviously they were not going to have any kind of editorial control. They were never shown the script, you know, the real guys, even though they're in it. But when I showed the librarian, you know, who, as you say, was assaulted and sort of taken hostage, you know, it was very important that she felt that it wasn't misrepresentative in any way. And as I say, you know, she felt after watching it that she could finally begin to forgive them.
And they felt, and they were also okay with it, I suppose, in the end.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously there are things that they're not proud of.
Right.
And, or let's say that they're deeply ashamed of. But I think you also see that remorse in the movie.
Well, you do, yeah. And you keep that camera rolling after answers are delivered to get those nice pregnant moments with all that emotion sort of welling up within them. And indeed, that emotion, you see that also on the faces of the parents as well. So, yeah. Look, it's a remarkable story, and I think you've done a great job in bringing this story in a highly original way to the big screen. Thanks very much, Bart Layton, for coming in and speaking about American Animals with me on the Hub on Screen.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Bart Layton, writer, director of American Animals, which is out around Australia now.